Good morning. I want to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals today. Look forward to having you with us. I'm sure that it will be an interesting experience for those who have not heard oral arguments in an appellate court before. I think we'll go ahead if you're ready and get started. And I will ask the deputy clerk to read the first case, announce the first case, and the lawyers.
The court will now call Jonathan Kelly Savory et al. of the City of Mansfield. The main court, Mr. David Kelman to argue for the appellant, Mr. Tim Schrollis to argue for the appellee.
Mr. Keltner.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. This is one of the rare appeals we have from a temporary injunction, and we recognize that overcoming a temporary injunction ruling is often difficult, and of course Judge Womack is a very respected judge. But the truth of the matter is this appeal deals with construction of a conveyance document. It is a question of law that is reviewed de novo, not under the abuse of discretion standard, or at least the part of the abuse of discretion standard that deals with following contract construction. The facts are largely not in dispute. I'm going to talk about those, and I'll be referring to an oral argument handout I've given you that are the documents that are, or excerpts, excuse me, from the documents that are involved. The plat was filed for this gated community in November of 1995, and a declaration and homeowners bylaws were drafted at the same time on December 6th. Actually, the declaration was sent for filing that day, and a day later, the Homeowner Association bylaws were sent to the Secretary of State. This is one of those times when Tom Wilder was quicker than the Secretary of State. The declarations got filed 4 days before the Secretary of State confirmed the receipt of the homeowner documents. Now, this case deals with a simple issue that is a little bit difficult under the contracts, and it is whether the R2 lots, which are heavily wooded and no one is going to testify that they were meant for any kind of development, were passed to the Homeowners Association by the declaration, or whether they were retained by the developer. Now, we have a huge difference of opinion between us on that issue. Let me tell you their theory and why it doesn't work, and then I'll tell you the rest of the facts. The declaration draws a distinction between two defined terms, capital P property and capital C common property. The capital P property was the residential lots the developer intended to resell and nothing else. And the declaration is very clear about that. The common property all went to, like the streets and other things, all went to the Homeowners Association, and the description includes the R2 lots, and I will run you through that description. The argument from the city now is this, that capital P property and capital C common property are really the same thing, and the exclusion of R2 lots in property also excludes them from common property. I don't think they're going to be able to point to you anything in the document that makes that kind of distinction. The distinction is made that they go to different, the common property goes to a different source entirely. No doubt that everybody involved thought this was the case, because between 1995 at the time this was dedicated until 2013 when this dispute arose, the Homeowners Association cared for, maintained the R2 lots that are at issue here and the other common properties such as the streets and other types of easements. This dispute arose when the city announced that it was going to open up some a bridge to allow access to the R2 lots and then allow R2 lots to be used as a city park. And even worse from our standpoint, allow access to the lake that is on my client's property and is undisputably owned by them. Now, the issue is, what they say is, well, the developer, 10 days after all this, transferred the lots to the community foundation. True enough, he attempted to do so. But if he didn't own them, he could pass no title. And he was confused in any event, in all due respect to him, because he transferred some of the lots a third time and once a fourth time to other people as well in an inconsistent manner. The other side raises standing. I'm not going to spend too much time. Tab 5 of our handout deals with the 10.4 provision of the declaration, which makes clear that the declarant, which is the developer, the association, and the owners all have standing to pursue protection of the restrictive covenants in the deed. They point to another 10.2 that deals with interpretation of the declaration, and of course for internal purposes the HOA board had that responsibility. They say that carries over to enforcement. If so, the Mitchell versus LaFlame case that we cite to you is wrong, and I don't think it is. The enforcement proceeding is in this position very clear. But even if they're right, the issue is whether a court would hold that the HOA's determination was an abuse of discretion, and that's what this suit has all been about. And how else would you get a judicial determination of that? Let me turn to the interpretation, which is the major issue here. And again, here's what the city's interpretation is, and it depends on a proposition that under these documents and the rules of legal construction cannot be true. They say that the declarations are limited to property. We agree. The declarations do deal with property. They then say the term property includes common property, and I am quoting them on that point. They say the R2, because the R2 lots are not within the property, capital P property, in that definition, they're not in capital C common property either. That's where we depart. Let me draw this example by using streets, which is also part of the common property. They're excluded under tab 2, which is the definition of common property. They are excluded from the definition of lots. Property is, the capital P property is defined only as made up of specific lots. Because they're excluded from the lots, they're excluded from property. The streets are. We know that. But look at the first deposition, the definition in tab 2, which is the definition of common property, and they're specifically included. Now, that means that there is a distinction between capital P property and capital C common property. And they treat them differently because the common property goes solely to the HOA for their maintenance and keep up. And additionally, the other property, it remains with the developer. And the R2 lots are expressly included by definition and description in common property.
I've got a question.
Yes.
You argue that if we agree with the appellee's position, that we would that we're ignoring plain unambiguous language.
Yes.
And that provisions would become meaningless in these documents. Can you point me to the plain unambiguous language and those provisions that would be rendered meaningless?
Let me turn to the provisions that will be would be meaningless first, if I can. And give me 2 seconds and I will do that. It is actually sections 4.02, 410, and 601, but most specifically 9.04. And Judge, 9.04 deals with the issues regarding maintenance that are caused because of the creek. The creek only adjoins the R2 properties, and also by issues of the lake, and the lake adjoins the R2 properties as well. Those would become meaningless because the association was given the obligation to maintain those and the issues that might arise from flooding and other types of things. In the in second answer to your question is 5.01. And let me walk through the document, and I think you can see, I hope I'm going to be able to answer your question. 5.01 is under tab 1. Here's what it says. It is very specific, and it contains the only granting language in the declarations or the plat. And here's what it says, and I quote, "The association will hold record fee simple title to the streets and all other common properties." That is a conveyance document. There's no conveyance language in the plat whatsoever. If you look at tab 2, the first page, common properties are defined, and they're defined as the streets, as we just talked about, greenbelt areas. They are exclusively in the R2 lots. Bicycle or jogging paths, I must confess to you, they do not show up on the plat. But they are exclusively, the testimony is, in the R2 areas. Landscaping easements, there are none. Floodways, they comprise most of the R2 areas. And creeks, the only creek in this is, and they describe it as being along, is, and I'm going to show you on the plat in a second, it is only along the R2 properties. And then there is a definition dealing with the lake. And the lake is on the north side of the property. It adjoins the R2 properties, and in fact, it's a very specific dedication there of a portion of the lake along the north boundary between the jogging path and the water's edge, a distance of 5 feet into the water of the lake. Very specific. Now, again, we're going to look at the map in a minute. Lots are defined, actually, at tab 2 on the second page. I have to admit that the lots do not include several things. The streets, remember, the lots are the things to be developed by the developer. They don't include the streets. They don't include things that are transferred by the declaration into the common property. And these were transferred by common property. And finally, they don't include things that are set aside for public recreational purposes. I'll show you on the plat that the R2 lots were. Property is defined by certain lots, and they are mentioned in Exhibit A of the declaration. Those don't include the R2 lots. Now, please, if you will, let's look at the plat, which is tab 3.
Can I ask you one other question?
Yes.
You're talking about the public recreation areas. Is it your position that what is called a public recreation area is really, in fact, a private recreation area?
Your Honor, we can take that position, and we do, but the other issue is, remember, the denomination of what is intended for doesn't deal with the ownership of the property. And that was very clear, and even in the Zoning and Planning Commission discussion, that was made clear as well, and as you see from our brief, the commissioners didn't think that that property was owned by the city of Mansfield, and the issue of ownership is different from that discussion. It's also not inconsistent. Actually, 4.10 of the declaration discusses a situation in which that kind of property could be dedicated to the city of Mansfield at a later time by the HOA, which is terribly important here. On the plat, I want to make sure in what we have. All the colored property in tab 3 are the R2 lots. The multiple colors indicate lots that the developer actually transferred several times, one four times, the other three times, according to at least the deed records. So that's what it is. Now, I want to point out one thing to you. It's very important. On the outside of all this runs Walnut Creek, which is mentioned in the definition of common property, and it touches only the R2 lots. So surely it is referring to that. Second, the jogging area, and this is an area that is sort of forested. The creek falls on the opposite side. If you look on this on Google Maps, you will see exactly what it looks like in real life. It has not changed in any way, except you'll see the bridge that has been built across. The other issue that is terribly important is the void space right at the top is the lake. It is described in the common properties as well. And it describes that in the common properties or the area bordering the lake between that and the jogging path and going 5 feet into the water. Even though those lots were, and even though the lake is actually deeded to us. In 2003, the Homeowners Association took the position that that was their common property. They don't now. because they have a different issue. But that was terribly important. Now, the question is, are there two lots in the common property? You bet they are. And when you look at this, you can absolutely tell. The only jogging paths, the only green belt, are within the R2 lots. That's what the developer's intention was. Now, here's what the city says. They said, well, yeah, it does look like they were conveyed, but that conveyance was erroneous because other parts of the document demonstrate that the declarant didn't intend to do those. What they say is there never was a transfer of any of the common properties into the HOA. And then alternatively, they say, if the streets were transferred, they were done by the plat. Nothing in the plat has any kind of conveyance issues. There are three problems with their theory. One, Judge, the one you just mentioned, is rendering parts of the declaration meaningless, which is a fundamental rule of construction. Second, they have to find an ambiguity. What is the ambiguity? They say the ambiguity is that the term common property is subsumed in and is part of property. That is legally nonsensical. The rules of construction wouldn't allow that, so you don't get to extraneous evidence. But even if you do get to the extraneous evidence, you're taking care of that. My yellow light has gone off, but the red light hadn't come on. I assume that means I stop.
Red light working? Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
It's just a little bit dim, Counsel.
Or maybe
we're in trouble.
I'm the one that's a little bit dim.
Okay, Mr. Sarala.
May it please the court. I began practicing law 30 plus years ago, and one of the first lawyers I worked under was Mr. Keltner, and I was very pleased to learn the art of appellate practice under him. And to this day, I consider him one of the masters. And I think this is the first time I've had the opportunity to argue against him. That being said, he's completely wrong today for a number of reasons. Let's start with fundamentally their biggest problem, and one he never mentioned. Plaintiffs don't dispute that the city and the City Parks Corporation have a chain of title through recorded deeds to the R2 lots. Their entire case rests on one argument, that the city's deeds are invalid because the declaration was a prior conveyance of the R2 lots to the association. Therefore, assuming you can convey title through a declaration, which I'm not sure you can, as pointed out in our brief, they still need a statement of conveyance. The court, as they pointed out in their brief, the court must give effect to the intent of the declarant as expressed in the document. It's objective intent that counts. And as they state, the question is not what the parties meant to say, but the meaning of what they did say. Now, that being said, it's not just that they have to find an intent to convey, and not just an intent that the association eventually have some title to the R2 lots, but that it would be they were conveyed through this instrument. And I challenge you to find words of any kind that imply that the declarant intended to convey title through this document, because it's not there. Mr. Keltner said it. There is no other conveying language in this declaration, so they have to rely on two words, will hold. That's in section 501. They gave it to you. I'd like to go through that with you. If that section and those two words aren't a conveyance, they lose. No ambiguity. We're not arguing this document's ambiguous. It's not a conveyance as a matter of law. Section 5.01 says the association will hold record fee simple title to the streets and all of the common properties. Will hold. The association will hold. Now, let's talk about that. That will hold is a statement of an anticipated future status, but it is not words of conveyance. They argue that will hold can be a word of promise used to create a contractual obligation. They cite Brian Garner for that. It's important to look at the context in which Mr. Garner was talking. He said that as part of a discussion as to the best way to memorialize a contractual commitment. In other words, he was discussing whether you should use the word shall or must or will or what. And Mr. Garner opined that will, in some circumstances, is a preferable word of contractual promise. For example, in contracts of adhesion where one party is the stronger party, they can say, I will do this. And that's a contractual commitment. And in friendly contracts where you don't want to use the word must because it sounds somewhat onerous. And because shall is, as we all know, has some ambiguities. I don't have an argument with that. Will can be a word that implies a contractual promise. If I say, I will sell my house to you for $150,000, that could be a contract and a binding contract. But it is not a conveyance. It is still a present commitment to do something in the future. Therefore, will hold, even if the declarant had said, I will convey, which he did not, that doesn't convey anything. It is a statement that I will do something in the future. And if he didn't, and he didn't, he instead conveyed the R2 lots to the city park court, or actually to the Community Foundation of Texas, then there's no conveyance.
Mr. Stahala.
Yes.
You seem to be stopping in the middle of a phrase.
I'm going to get to the rest of it. But,
I hope so.
But my point is that even if you take, and I think it gets worse for them, but if you stop, that the best case is you stop there. But they still don't get there. But if you go on, it says, all of which have been or will be dedicated to the association.
I'm talking about the part that says in fee simple title.
Again, it may well be that that's a statement that the declarant intended at some point in the future that the association hold record fee simple title to the streets and the other companies.
What are those words of art in terms of Texas law dealing with this defining of the extent of title that is held by an owner after a conveyance?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Fee simple title. Isn't that a designation long honored and unchallenged in Texas law as to what is the ownership interest held by a person who has received a conveyance?
It is certainly a accepted status of title, but in order to convey fee simple title, you have to still have a conveyance. If I say I will convey to you fee simple title to my house, using my prior example, that doesn't mean I have conveyed fee simple title to my house to you. It simply means I will at some point in the future, and you may have a contractual action against me if I don't. You may not, depending on the circumstances, but it doesn't constitute a conveyance.
Let's consider that the example that you're using in terms of I will convey to you fee simple title to lot and block, house at address number so-and-so, and then the people who are a part of that transaction on either side, the person saying that I will convey and the person receiving the title, treat it as a conveyancing instrument or conveyancing transaction. What happened here in this circumstance in terms of the actual maintenance, handling of the property that was a part of the definition of the items that are specified in 5.01.
Well, they have argued we can't get into issues outside the document itself because that gets into, they argue this is unambiguous as a matter of law, and if it's ambiguous, then we raise a question of fact.
I didn't imply that. I was looking at ambiguity.
Okay.
I'm just talking about the context of future activity in terms of what conduct happened after these words were used in 5.01 as regards the items that are covered by lots
I don't believe it matters, but the evidence is that there was some maintenance by the HOA. What the record doesn't indicate, one way or the other, is whether the city consented to the HOA doing that maintenance. And the fact is that the city did, but the record is silent on that issue one way or the other. So the mere fact that the city may have done some minor maintenance on the R2 lots doesn't indicate that they thought they owned the lots. And even if the HOA did think they own the lots, that's not the issue. The issue is whether or not this document is a conveyance of that title to the association.
Thank you, sir.
Now, getting on to the rest of that paragraph, it goes on to say, all of which have been or will be dedicated to the association, have been, past tense, or will be in the future. Clearly, again signifying that the declarant was not intending to convey anything through this document, and as shown on and pursuant to the plat. In other words, the issue is whether or not he dedicated the property in the plat, and he did not. He did convey easement interests to the streets and some other common properties to the homeowners through the plat, and there's no doubt that they have those easement interests title to those easement interests at this time. But there was no dedication of the R2 lots to the association in the plat, and that's clearly what he was referring to, the declarant, in this section 501. And in fact, that's clear because if you go on in the declaration, if you look at the definition of lots, and this is illustrative of words that will be rendered meaningless, he excludes from the definition of lots any lots shown on the plat as intended for public recreation or public park purposes. Clearly, that language indicates that the declarant intended all along, from the time this declaration was prepared, that the R2 lots, which were designated for public recreation use, to be public park. He even used those words in the declaration.
If the R2 lots are not included in the green belt that's referred to, then where are the green belts?
The green belts are all over the place. When this declaration was filed, this whole area was green belt. There was nothing out there but trees and grass.
Does the record support that, or is that just your recollection of what you know?
I believe there is some testimony from Mr. Brian Brandstetter, the president of the HOA, to that effect, yes. And I will go on to say that I don't believe that if you look at the plat, there is no jogging trail on the plat, but you can't find all of these elements on the plat, either in the R2 lots or the R lots, but you can find components of almost all of them, all on the R1 lots, which is the property that is governed by the declaration. Keep in mind, the declaration, when the declaration cites the property that is governed by this declaration, it doesn't even include the R2 lots. They're not referred to at all, even in the description of the affected property. The association's argument is, even though this declaration has no bearing, no legal bearing whatsoever on the R2 lots, it actually acted to convey them to the association. And that, I think, is an absolutely ludicrous argument. It just was not the intent. The clear intent, as expressed in the document, was that the lots, the R2 lots, go to the city for public park purposes. And that's exactly what the declarant 2 weeks later did.
Mr. Hall, what do you interpret the declarations to mean when it is, when they are set up as a part of a gated community?
There is a
What is a gated community first?
Well, I can tell you, we represent cities and we have all kinds of gated communities. But
well,
generally
and then,
speaking.
And then for the purpose of excluding the public except upon a limited admission?
Generally through the streets. Even many gated communities have open pedestrian access and pedestrian trails, public pedestrian trails running through them.
I concede that the intention of a gated community is to avoid use by the public of the property inside the community.
That's correct. I do not accept that. If that property is public property, and in this case it is, and that was always the intent. I see my yellow lights on, so I'm gonna jump. I want to touch one other thing.
Do you draw a distinction between the use of the public property, I mean the property for public use, and the use of the streets for public use in a gated community? Because you said you think gated communities sometimes are open to the public in certain places, trails.
Yes.
The streets are certainly not.
That's correct.
Okay, so you see a distinction between
public
coming in via vehicle or public coming in via foot
absolutely
traffic.
And the declarant in fact intended that as well, because these streets are dedicated as private streets. There's no question about that. There's a public emergency access easement overlaying the streets to allow police and fire to get in, but no other public vehicular traffic would be allowed. That's correct. Now keep in mind one other reason, and there's many I've cited in my brief, but I can't get to them. I'll say this: the declaration could not be a conveyance because the association didn't legally exist at that time. They argue that it's just a question of filing difference, and they were prepared at the same time. That's not the case. The declaration on the first page says that the declarant intends to create, clearly knowing that the association did not exist at that time. And as a matter of law, the association wasn't created until December 15th, 4 days after, at least 4 days, and maybe 6 days after the declaration was filed. So, and the law is clear that a corporation the articles of incorporation weren't even signed until after the declaration was filed. So as a matter of law, you can't convey property to a non-existent entity, and that's exactly what the plaintiffs is arguing. They have no ability to do that. The declarant couldn't do it, and for that reason and all the reasons we state in our brief, we suggest to you that the trial court's decision should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cirala. Mr. Keltner, do you have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Just a bit. I do disagree with Mr. Cirala, although he did an excellent job. The truth of the matter is here, he says our biggest problem is we don't have a present conveyance. There is only language of intent. I ask you to look at 501. It speaks of title to common properties. It uses fee simple. It uses the term will in the way Brian Garner in his dictionary indicated it would be used. If Mr. Cirala is right, in SEC matters in which documents explain who has title will never be right, because they always say shareholders will have X rights, these types of things. The term will is used as a present conveyance expression. He alluded to one argument he made in his brief, and he didn't quite get through it, but he says that a later phrase that says, all of which have been or will be dedicated to the association as shown on or pursuant to the plat makes a difference. It doesn't. The last antecedent rule, which the Texas Supreme Court adopted in Spradlin versus Jim Walters Homes in interpreting the Texas Constitution homestead exemptions, took the Constitution and said that phrase applies to the phrase separated by commas immediately before it, and in this case, that is the term of lots, which were the residential lots reserved to the developer. It doesn't deal with the common property at all, and he is legally, I think, wrong on that one. It is more than something, a commitment to do something in the future, and everybody thought so.
So you think there's no difference between the phrase, I will do this, and I am doing this?
It obviously, Your Honor, depends on the context the phrase is used.
And if you put the word now in there, you got no ambiguity. I will do this now. I am doing this now. Those mean the same thing. But absent the word now.
I see your point. The distinction I would draw is we don't see deeds doing that. That is not the kind of conveyance issues they use. And also, if you look The Homeowners Association didn't think so either. In the declaration, one of the duties of the homeowners is to accept fee simple title, and it's one of the most expressive duties. And let me tell you, that's Article 6, Item Q, to own fee simple title or an easement interest in the common properties. So obviously, I think that was intended to do. Mr. Shrala didn't touch on one issue except briefly, and that is the statute of frauds argument. I want to answer, if I were you, I'd have a question about that. The only testimony in this record regarding the locating of the properties was from Mike Goodrich, a very respected real estate lawyer. He followed the definition in the properties that said it doesn't have to be meets and bounds. It can be somebody, it just requires somebody who is familiar with the locality to be able to locate the R2 lots. He did precisely that. There is no testimony to the contrary. So that is what works. I disagree with Mr. Shrala on one other thing. This wasn't all Greenbelt. All you got to do is look at the definition of the term lots in Exhibit A. That is everything other than the R2 lots, the entranceway, and the streets. Those couldn't be Greenbelt under their theory of the case, not just mine. Based on this, their interpretation, and they say that this wasn't a grant and a declaration can't be a grant. If it isn't, nothing was conveyed because the plat certainly conveyed nothing because there is no suggestion in the plat of words of gifting, transferring, or anything of the like. And if that's the case, we really have a mess in the city of Mansfield. And I don't think they want to do it. Their argument about the HOA not being created, if that's the case, one other thing, there's an indemnification to the city from the HOA. The HOA has acted as if it had authority, and it actually acts, interestingly, for the city of Mansfield and also indemnifies the city of Mansfield. If that's the case, that didn't happen either, which is going to give rise to other messes on down the road. This argument is a litigation argument. It is not a real-life argument. In real life, there was a transfer of the common properties. The HOA treated it as a transfer of the common properties. The owners even treated it as a common properties. Heavens, in 2003, they even claimed the lake was part of the common properties. So on that ground, we ask that the, in all due respect, that Judge Rolmack be reversed and the temporary injunction granted. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Kelton. Thank both sets of lawyers for your presence and participation. Excellent briefs and arguments. Your case is submitted and you're excused. Thank you. We'll call the second case as soon as they get clear.